But Dave Zanotti is joining us from the American Policy Roundtable, always making his monthly sojourn with us as we look at the world of politics, not from left or right, from a biblical perspective.
But and also giving us historical perspectives
yes.
as well.
And we always like having you on around this time of year, Dave, because you usually have a nugget for us or something to remind us, you know, of our founding, the principles we were founded on, the Constitution and things like that. And I'm sure you guys have been talking about this and thinking about this in the American Policy Roundtable. But do you have any kind of reflections considering, you know, the kind of state we're in? And we, I mean, we all know. We all know where we're at. We're divided. Everybody's yelling at everybody. But going back to our founding, going back to those days, anything that you guys have kind of been ruminating on that really is just sticking with you right now?
Well, I appreciate that kind of a question. Of course, I always enjoy talking to you guys. I learn as much as I share when we talk together, because I know you pay attention and I know you care a lot about our country. Two thoughts. One is, let's talk Colin Kaepernick for a moment and Nike shoes. Yeah, that's kind of a parable, if you will, of where we are right now. Nike came out with a shoe design that they pulled from the market because Mr. Kaepernick objected. There's a whole lecture series in that case study. But the point is that Nike placed what they called the Betsy Ross flag, or the original colonial flag. There were many original colonial flags, some that said an appeal to heaven, some that said don't tread on me. There were many flags of the colonial era. But this particular one with the colonies, familiar with it, we'd recognize it instantly because it's got the colonies, the 13 stars in a circle. Okay, so Nike is pulling the shoe and continuing its crusade based on Mr. Kaepernick's point of view, which, whether it was from Colin Kaepernick or from your high school AP history teacher or your college professor or an editorial writer or the guy next door, is an impossible way to look at history. It's a fascinating thing. It sort of falls into the parable of Jesus talking about, if I see a speck in my brother's eye, I want to get it out, but I ignore the mote in my own, how's that going to work? It's a good idea to want to help your brother or sister with the speck in their eye, but get rid of the mote in your own first. And Jesus talks a lot about the eyes and the light in your eyes and your perspective, how you see things. And we've had a number of dialogues with historians across the country on the public square. And one of our favorites has been with Dr. David McCullough. And we proposed to him the notion that when we analyze history, we like to try to go 100 years behind the eyes of the person whom we're studying. Because unless we understand the world as they understood their world, we can't understand their actions. And historians across the board have all agreed that's a very healthy way to look at history. Well, it's the antithesis of what Mr. Kaepernick and Nike are doing. They're looking at Betsy Ross and the flag and the colonial era from their current state of what they would call enlightenment and out of hand condemning the people of history. Man, that's really easy to do, but it's not very effective, and it's certainly not very fair.
It takes for granted what we have as though we would have this just based on our own benighted enlightenment, and not the fact that we have what we have and the freedoms we have and the liberties we have. And America, which is, by the way, the most diverse nation that has ever existed in the history of the world, and exists peaceably together, we have this because of those who came before us and because of the work they did, however imperfect they may have done it, because of the foundation that they laid that we were able to build upon.
That's a critical observation. And you're exactly right. We look back, if I could try to tell you what I thought I heard you say, we look back with our state of, quote, enlightenment and say, boy, were they stupid. Why didn't they see what we saw? Well, you know, they probably did. But from where they started, they could only get so far to accomplish. Just like today, we struggle tremendously with questions of justice and mercy and truth in this culture. And people will look back 50 years from now and go, what was wrong with those people? 100 years from now, why didn't they see what we see? Because they did see it, but they could only do so much because guess what? They didn't have magic wands back then either. So this is one example. When we look at our history, we have to look at it in context. I would recommend to everybody, and I have no financial interest in this whatsoever. David McCullough is a friend of ours. He's America's historian of the late and early 21st century. And he's got a new book called Pioneers, and it's all about Ohio. It's all about that Ohio was the first Wild West of America and how Ohio was started by a handful of people on the East Coast who had the courage to step up before the American Constitution was even established and to create a document called the Northwest Ordinance. And in that Northwest Ordinance, they set the groundwork for abolition and for freedom for all people. after the Declaration, before the Constitution, the Northwest Ordinance existed to make absolutely certain that we had religious liberty, education, and no slavery in the next five states that would become a part of the Union. And that was done, by the way, and led by Christian people, one of them, Manasseh Cutler, being a pastor.
And Dave, because I'm sorry, your phone cut out a little bit there. Name of the book and the author once again.
Yes, David McCullough, and the book is The Pioneers. Within 30 pages, you'll see so much history that you never got in school, because Dr. McCullough is fond of going back to original source documents. He spent years researching with his researcher, Mike Hill, in Marietta and along the Ohio River, original source documents, the letters, the diaries, the wills and testaments, the transactions of how this state began. And it's critical to understand that in the founding of the Northwest Territory, we had the beginning of the end of slavery. So, you know, this is where this was all coming from. And Betsy Ross, by the way, who's getting a bad rap from Colin Kaepernick and Nike right now, came from a state that was a free state. See, they made a mistake about those 13 scars and circles and said the 13 colonies, slavery was legally. The 13 colonies weren't sovereign when that flag was made. They were subjects of Great Britain. Slavery was one of their issues. They couldn't change it because they didn't have a voice in Parliament. It took them having a war first and winning a war to have a voice. And as soon as they had a voice, five of those stars became free states and never had slaves. And that's a lot of progress prior to the Internet in less than one lifetime.
Yeah.
But see, we don't look at it that way. We want everyone to have a magic wand and be perfect. I guess, I don't know. Maybe we're hooked on rewind buttons. We think that you can rewind a tape and change it, and you can't. The history is as it is, and those are real people. The question is, what do you do with it? How do you make it better from where you start? So this is the difference between whether we're going to live in reality or whether we're going to live in fantasy. And this is the problem. I mean, people who look at life as a video game are having a real hard time when it comes to politics these days.
Yeah. I think an ignorance of history, as you said, is rampant in our culture today. You know, there's a few people, you talk to like Ben Sasse and some others who have a knowledge of history, but even among our elected officials, there's a paucity of understanding of our founding and our history.
Yeah, so we're subject to being blown all over the place by winds of doctrine in the historical realm that are simply convenient but not true. And this is why we spend so much time in what we call the American mission. Our basic job at the roundtable is to teach America every day. Sometimes our classroom is the legislature. Sometimes it's the courtroom. Sometimes it's the boardroom. Sometimes it's the shop floor. And sometimes it's the street corner. You never know where we're going to come up with a teaching opportunity on how to apply biblical principles into the arena of public policy. But we've been doing that for 40 years now. And what we find is every time we go back to source documents and give people a chance to breathe in the context of their own period of history, we find tremendous heroism and progress. Now, this is not to say for a moment that we started from a perfect place or that we didn't have real bad people in America, because we've had really bad people in America from the start, people who lived the antithesis of the Declaration of Independence or in denial of it. Yes, that's always been the struggle, but it's always going to be the struggle in a fallen world. If you want to have a society established on religious liberty, upon free education of the mind, and I mean a free academy in the sense that you have the right to develop and study and learn, and you want to make certain that you have liberty and justice for all, it's going to be a fight, because there's always going to be somebody standing in your way.
Yeah. You know who else had really bad people? Every other nation on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're a fallen people. And I think part of the problem is not just that we're ignorant of our political history, but we're ignorant of our biblical history. And
the reality is the two are one.
Yeah. You can't separate those two out, and because it was the principles and the understanding of the world that God gave us through the Bible that led to the understanding of the political realm and how society should be ordered politically to our founding fathers. And one of those main doctrines that deeply influenced how they set up our country was the idea that man is fallen and is not perfect or perfectible, and that when you're dealing with fallen men, you need checks and balances and to avoid absolute power conglomerating in a few hands. And if we abandon the doctrine of original sin, you know, some in our culture have done and say, no, man's just good. We just need to educate them better or whatever. we've lost a major underpinning for our whole understanding of why we have the government we have.
You couldn't be more right. And let's think about this. If we were in a classroom together and kind of drew these theories out on the board, or these lines of logic out on the board, we agree that the framers believed that humans were fallen and prone to bad behavior. Yet they established a government based upon the consent of the governed and acknowledged that self-government was critical if we would have any chance of success in a constitutional republic to preserve liberty without chaos. In other words, people would have to do the right thing. They just said man has fallen, but then they established a system that says that man has to do the right thing. What bridges that gap? Were they that illogical? Were they were they on drugs? What would make them think that such a system could exist unless they believed that there was a creator who was capable of redeeming humankind and permitting us the opportunity to live better than our fall?
We're talking with Dave Zanotti from the AP Roundtable.
And Dave, you mentioned, you said the phrase constitutional republic. For those that aren't familiar with what that is, we should be, correct?
What an important question. It's so, I love talking to you guys. You don't miss a trick. Couldn't be a more important question. We try at every point to never use the word democracy. Now, we slip up sometimes. But what's terrifying is to listen to how many times all of our presidents in our lifetimes, all of them, have not slipped up. They don't even know this is a constitutional republic. They continue to refer to this country as a democracy. And in so doing, they are playing right into the anti-historical narrative of our founding. The only person who was, well, there were some, but the leading person who was in love with the concept of democracy was Thomas Jefferson, because he spent so much time in France. And he loved what they were doing over there, and became president of the United States. But ironically, this person who is worshipped by the left today for his claims on democracy not only was a slaveholder, but was responsible for almost turning Ohio into a slave state, because he was attempting to change the Northwest Ordinance in such a way it would have permitted slavery here. And if it hadn't been for Manasseh Cutler, the minister, and Ephraim Cutler, his son, who then Ephraim Cutler served in the Ohio legislature and voted to make certain, actually served in the Ohio legislature and served at the Ohio Constitutional Convention, made certain that the Jeffersonians did not get slavery in Ohio. If it hadn't been for the Christians, the Jeffersonians, who were anything but, would have prevailed and brought slavery not only into Ohio, but into the next five states, and our history would have been inevitably changed. Who knows the disasters that would have come from that? People today, they celebrate Jefferson, they celebrate his concept of democracy and his love with the French Revolution, but they do it without historical perspective and understand this was a bad idea, and they did it the wrong way. They believed in the perfectibility of man, which ended up in the Reign of Terror with Robespierre and ultimately with Napoleon and a French dictatorship.
And a lot of dead bodies.
And a lot of dead bodies. It's funny, because this was all modeled for us. All modeled for us in the 1800s, all modeled for us again at the end of the 1900s with the European dictatorships. And yet we have people standing on stages today running for the presidency that are advocating the exact doctrines of godless socialism, which have failed under any other label twice in two other centuries.
Great, great human cost. Not just in death, but in misery.
Exactly right. Because when you lose God, you lose man. Mm-hmm. Always. And that, by the way, is another testimony that we've had affirmed by none other than Lord Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, a member of the British House of Lords, the former chief rabbi of the United Kingdom, an outstanding author, who, when we've met and spoken with him on these matters, and said, can you make the formula as simple as lose God, lose man? He said, absolutely true. That is exactly on point. So this stuff does boil down to worldview and to some very simple basics, and that's why every 4th of July, I thank God, as John Quincy Adams did, that our two greatest holidays are the 4th of July and Christmas, because there's a connection between what happened in Bethlehem and what happens in the human soul that permits us to believe that we can live free with justice and liberty for all.
All right, Dave, the first Democratic Party debate from a nonpartisan perspective. Tell us what your thoughts were on the debates.
Well, I'm not going to ask you guys because you're in the biz and it would be unfair, but I've been asking a lot of people whom I know and respect and who care a lot about the country if they watched, and most of them did not or watched only minutes, and I congratulated them all. I don't care whether it was Republican debates or Democrat debates. As long as we have people running for the presidency who are acting like second graders in front of their teachers, desperately waving their hands, wanting to be called upon and to prove that they know the right answer, I think none of them are qualified to be president of the United States. I don't care whether they're Republicans or Democrats, because what we've got now is a situation where cable news, whether it's Fox or MSNBC, whether it's the Democrat Party or the Republican Party, we are literally watching them control these contests. And they are not debates. They're in no way, shape, or form fair and equitable. They do not have equal time. They do not even answer the same questions. And they are totally driven by the host. The process is so bastardized, it is so corrupted, it is so wrong that no one should participate in viewing. 15 million people did, 18 million on the second night. That compares to 24 million when the Republicans started this fiasco in 16 with their non-debate, debate, absurd process started by Fox. But it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. It's a disservice to the country. And I say, walk away. If we want to boycott anything, boycott that. I am forced to watch them so that I can give analysis. But if we had those 10 children, all right, in any form of an educational environment, we had those 10 children, each of those two nights, those 20 children up on the stage, and they behave that way, they would all be pulled off the stage and disciplined. Those people need to grow up.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to give you the magic wand, Dave. You've got the magic wand. What would a substantive, if I can get that word out, a substantive debate or exchange between presidential contenders look like?
Thank you. I would say that we've modeled it and that it actually exists in the Saddleback Civil Forum on the Presidency that we hosted on radio. Rick Warren did. And in California, between Barack Obama and John McCain, it was the most popular debate of that election, of the 2008 election. And what it was, first off, you have to have qualified candidates. Obscure outliers, I have no bit. If you do not have the means to run for the presidency and the support to at least, if you're not already registered in enough states to win, not just to dump the Electoral College, but to win, you do not have a significant amount of money raised. And I put a threshold number up there for the presidency of $50 million to start. If you don't have the money, you don't have the polling percentages where you can show at least 10% support, and you're not already registered and your paperwork's done, you're not on the stage. Anything short of that is absurd and it's a fraud. You might as well pull a guy off the street and let him talk. He's got just as much chance as the other people. So one, you have to have real contenders. Secondly, you must ask them the same questions always, and you must give them equal time always. And I would suggest that you do not ever let them go face-to-face, head-to-head, but that you have four on the same night, you ask them all the same questions, and you let the viewers listen and the viewers decide.
There you go. We won't get it, but that's, you know, at least not probably not enough anyway.
It's doable, and we used to do it right, by the way.
Yeah.
This is nothing but, it's psychodrama.
Yeah. Well, and by your criteria, I'm afraid I'm probably not going to be able to run for president this year. I might be a little shy on the 50 million.
Yeah, me too. And here's the thing. We got nine more of these debates, and I'll tell you what we're going to find out.
There are nine more debates?
Yeah, sorry. I think there's nine more debates.
Good. So
that's just for the Democratic Party nomination?
Yeah.
oh, my gosh. And then we were not even in the presidential race. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So let me tell you what I think we got. You remember the old cartoons where there's always somebody that had to blow something up, and so they would put the dynamite in the cave, and they would run this long, 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 long fuse out and then light it and wait to see what happens?
Yeah.
I think the Democrats this year may have lit that fuse. If they continue in the path that they started on, I'm not sure anybody's going to be watching at the end. And I don't care whether it was the Democrats or the Republicans doing it. I'm a registered independent. I have to watch it. I'm telling everybody, don't bother. It's too painful, and it's embarrassing.
Well, I didn't bother, so I'm already following your advice.
God bless you. God bless you. Read the reviews, because what you saw, believe me, you didn't miss a thing that you're not glad you didn't see.
Well, I think
it was embarrassing.
The one thing I saw that seemed to sum up the entire debate was when Kamala Harris said, hey, nobody's tuning in to watch a food fight, which is basically what this was. It was a political food fight.
and then said they tuned in for us to show them how we're going to put food on their table.
Which no president ever does, unless he's serving his kids.
Yeah, help me figure that one out, right? And then on top of all that, I'm sorry, I just threw up my mouth a little bit just now. Just remembering that moment, because the rehearsed talking points, the indignation, people who played victim in one breath and bully on the next, it was just pathetic. And again, it's the culture. The Republicans, what we went through in 16, were no better. There's one difference, though. I will say there is one difference in these debates, not to say that they were better or worse. I'm just saying different. They've gotten into these knucklehead commentators that masquerade as journalists have gotten into this habit of getting candidates to raise their hands on questions.
It's so third grade. It really is.
It is so third grade. But it brings me back. They started that with Fox News in 15 in Cleveland in the first debate when they said, who of you is not certain that you will yet support your party's nominee if it's not you? One person raised their hand.
John Kasich?
That was not the right question. And it was not the right answer. Donald Trump refused to give them the answer that they wanted, and suddenly everybody was paying attention. Since that time, every time these knuckleheads have done one of these ask everybody raise of hands, it's been third grade and it's been embarrassing.
Yeah. Our level of political discourse has not gone up in this cycle. That's for sure. And it probably isn't going to.
Yeah, wait it out till you got a nominee, because on top of all that, the truth of the matter is that the Democrats played amazing games to manipulate their nomination process last time. They're doing the same thing behind the scenes again this time. And until they decide who the nominee is and the infrastructures of the party, there's no use getting worked up about it, because you're not even going to get to vote on it by that time. So, you know, it will take some time, and I suggest watching anything other.
Dave Zanotti joining us from the American Policy Roundtable. Well, once all this is done and we have candidates and there's our actual elections and actual issues and things on the ballot, not only nationally but locally and statewide legislation and local legislation and things like that, and people are going to need information, Dave. They're going to need a place to go to find out and find out where the candidates stand and what the issues are and where can they go.
Well, thank you for the setup. It was a wonderful segue, and it's what we do. From a nonpartisan perspective, our work of division is called the American Election Institute. That's simply our library and 40 years of experience in mining the depths of electoral politics in America from a nonpartisan perspective. We don't take a position on, we never tell people who to vote for. We never take a position on candidates. We talk about issues, and we do take positions on issues, but never on candidates. And so you'll find that easy at iVoters.com. Now, iVoters.com will wake up as the season wakes up, because it's a massive site to reach all 50 states. So we limit its actual turn-on dates until the time people are looking the hardest. But iVoters is coming, and the research is being done right now. And you can always stay up with us on all of this stuff at thepublicsquare.com. or APRoundtable.org.
Dave, thank you so much. It's always fascinating to talk to you, and you always give us some good insights, and especially this time of year, always give us some good history and a good book referral, which I'm going to definitely check out. The Northwest Ordinance, who knew?
Yeah, that's right. David McCullough, The Pioneers, and thank you always for encouraging people to pray for America, especially on Independence Day.
Absolutely. The most important thing we could do. God's still in charge. Just remind ourselves of that.
Yes.
Hey, Dave, thanks so much, buddy.
Thank you, David. Happy 4th.
My privilege. Thank you very much.